Robots Radio. Games, lore, stories, community. Just press play. Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. I don't know that there's an easy way to start this, so I think we'll just, maybe this is me starting it right here. Welcome to the podcast, everybody. You're probably, if you're listening to the 40K Lorecast, you're probably wondering, who's this voice? I haven't heard him before. And if you're listening to one of my shows, you're probably like, wait a minute, what's going on? We've got this, you probably read the title, so spoilers, yeah. I guess, not important here. But anyway, we are welcoming on to the network, the Robots Radio Podcast Network, the 40K Lorecast with John and Brad. Thank you so much for, first of all, for reaching out. And secondly, all of us have had some conversations over the last few weeks about setting this up and how this feels like it just makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And
100%.
Yeah. And so for people who don't know, I do the Fallout Lorecast, I do the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, I do the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. We have a bunch of other Lorecasts on the network. That is the bread and butter of what we do. And any show that's not a Lorecast is probably talking about some sort of video game or nerd culture or sci-fi or fantasy thing or something like that. So we are ecstatic to have you joining us and being on board here. And just so everybody knows, I'm Tom or Robots. I go by both. In fact, sometimes I say it so quickly, Tom or Robots. People think that's just one title.
And I called you Robert to your face as a result of that.
Yeah, well, I get done. That sometimes.
I always like to meet somebody that immediately very strong say their name completely wrong.
It's not even in the ballpark. Like, oh, okay,
yeah. So welcome to Jack and Benny joining the network. So, tell us, tell my audience, this just so everybody knows, this episode is going to go up across all of our different shows. So everyone's going to get a chance to meet everybody. And we are eventually, ooh, by the end of this episode, going to be talking about things like, well, how do Fallout and 40K or Elder Scrolls, what do they have in common? How are they different? Why do we like all of these things at the same time? And that kind of stuff. But before we get there, why don't you introduce yourself to my audience and let them know what you guys do?
Go for it, Brad.
I was about to say, I was going to let you say it first, and then I was going to one-up anything you said.
That's why I'm letting you go first. welcome to it. Yeah, yeah. We both play 40K.
So can you tell that these guys are strategy gamers? They're strategy gaming right here.
We're 100% strategy gamers.
I'm choosing to go second. Go ahead, Brad.
This is bullshit. However, I am Brad from the 40K Lorecast. I'm known for a lot of people from playing 40K, which I've been doing since the end of the beginning of time. There's a reason why I'm known as Old Man Brad. We won't give that email out again, by the way, because that's dead. I set it on fire.
Your email, your 40K almost actually predates high-speed internet. Yeah,
good job. That is true.
Wow. Yeah.
I also have an email with my name, and I have a 1 on the end of it and a 2 on the end of it, but I also think that I might have the original. I'm just that old that I accidentally created it and locked myself out. That's how old I am for stuff.
Okay. So if you're looking for an old man show, they should definitely tune into this show, right?
We spent a bunch of time also discussing how to open a PDF. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the one of the best things is during the 40K Lorecast, I don't think we've ever had an episode where we didn't talk about different games from Fallout to Mass Effect to whatever.
Yeah.
Because we've both been wild, avid gamers since forever. You know, I'm playing Dragon Age 4 on Nintendo. I was doing just the text versions of dungeon crawls back on the Commodore 64. A little too old for everybody. I'm just saying. That was a thing.
Yeah,
oh, I mean, God, it hurts.
Yeah, yeah.
It hurts.
Yeah, that's some
hurts,
old stuff.
Man. It hurts because it's true. I was in there. So obviously, I'm John Barsotti. I'm the other host of the 40K Lorecast. Like Brad, we've been playing the game. I started playing the game in the early 90s and then hard quit it for almost 20. Read the lore in the period of time because there's some rules that were not my favorite, and then they changed the rules and I came back to the game. It was wonderful when I came back to it.
That is true.
Yeah. I mean, I came back to shield drones and that was an improvement. So for those of you who know 40K, think about like just second edition, or shield drones? Which one do you want to play against?
Anyway, second edition.
all of my listeners are like, okay.
Yeah.
Don't know.
This is basically what happened. Like the difference in the games is, so let's talk about the, what is this? So 40K Lorecast, Brad and I made together as a way to kind of celebrate something that we've been experiencing a lot. One common thing about Warhammer 40,000 is that, as opposed to a video game, it's played live. And you play with, you know, you could be anywhere from
in person
20 people to hundreds of people in a room. And the games are about 3 hours long with breaks in between. And during those breaks, everyone tends to sit around, eat, sometimes drink, do kind of whatever.
Sometimes?
I'm being polite. Sometimes it gets a little bit rough. But what I'm getting is that where we made the podcast out of was in those times when we're all sitting around, a really common piece that kept, which is conversations really about like lore and pieces of the game, not the competitive element, but just the stories behind the game that are fun. Sometimes with us just complaining about, hey, the lore says it does this, but why on earth is it doing that?
The tabletop is significantly different.
Very sure.
But the IP of 40K is gigantic. It's just, there's so many factions. There's so many stories. And this all goes back into the early 90s till today. This is a ever-changing story, adapting storyline that's continuing on. There's just, we're as long as people will listen to us, we've still got material for forever.
That's something that's very similar with my show. So for example, both mm-hmm. Fallout and Elder Scrolls go back to the 90s, and the series have had multiple entries since then, and there's debate about the, you know, certain things that seem canon or don't, depending on mm-hmm. you know, which game in the series or who is controlling the series at the time in the case of Fallout. And there's all of that stuff, and then there's the, well, this happened in the game, but is that canon because that's a gameplay thing? You know, there's all, it's a lot of the similar kinds of conversations that we're having over in my stuff. So I totally get
it. I bought Fallout 1 on disc. I believe it was a CD. Should have been during the year.
It was CD-ROM.
Yeah. CD-ROM.
Yeah. 97.
It was a chain of stores that existed. I went to a mall.
Right. Yeah. Like the Babbage's or.
Yeah.
Did you have Babbage's?
It might have been Babbage's. One of them. Yeah. And we're buying
Babbage's.
The cover looked cool. And I bought Fallout. Dude. And this was the most amazing thing I'd ever played in my life.
Until Fallout 2, unpopular opinion, my favorite Fallout.
That's actually pretty strong in the
really?
The community. People who have played the first two, almost everybody I've talked to personally has said mm-hmm. Fallout 1 was great, but Fallout 2 was, they perfected it.
Yeah, I think Fallout Brotherhood of Steel or Fallout Tactics is where you get some pushback.
Absolutely. Yeah, those are very different games.
Why would you say that to me? I'm having a good time talking to Tom.
I'll just make us not get listeners from Tom Station. I actually enjoy Fallout Tactics. Is it as good as other Fallouts? No, but
he's going to double this up with his like Terminator 3 is the best Terminator also.
I said it's better than Terminator 2. Number one. But number two, it's the same way, but Fallout Tactics reminds me of XCOM.
Yeah. It's not a hot take.
XCOM. Yeah.
It's a lukewarm take that's sitting out getting rotten.
Terminator 1 is good. Terminator 1 is the best. I just think Terminator 2 is not as good as Terminator 3. And our Discord has explained to me that I'm wrong, and I'm just not. And I'm just hanging out in this hill dying.
Well, this is why this stuff is fun, because it's all subjective. These are all opinions, right? Everybody's experience is different. And that's something that I regularly have to, like, especially people who comment on YouTube. It's like, hey, man, subjective experience. Maybe relax a little bit and just enjoy, you know.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, there's also, I mean, but that's the whole thing. That's the whole point of gaming, though, is that we game, in my opinion, is almost an escape from reality. And I don't mean it in a bad way. I mean, in a good way of like, hey, because it lets me kind of live. For one thing, there's right and wrong. There's yeses and nos. Life is all gray area. Video games give you a bit more of the black and white. It's nice. It's a nicer escape. And whatever speaks to you, speaks to you. There's so many games out there that I've never played, or I played for 5 minutes and gave up on, that people love the end of this earth. And it's just, and that's how it's supposed to work. And that's all it is. What you do is you find people with stuff in common, you celebrate with them. I'm like, hey, you love this too? Awesome.
I've met so many people from all over the world, because I've traveled I was on the America's team for 40K. And so I've been to the World Championships, which is 36 to 40 some countries all come together. It used to just be the European team championships, but America didn't realize we weren't part of Europe, so we kept showing up. And
we actively fought to not be at one point.
Yeah. But I've met people from all over the world, and you get into that great talk about games and lore and everything else, and there's so many common games that people play. You get the Fallouts, the Elder Scrolls, the Mass Effects, the old, what was it, the gold boxes for the D&D games. D&D,
yeah. It's literally right there on my desktop. It's right there.
But I'm just saying, you can go into people. This is people that you don't even have the common language. You're pulling it together, but like you have those shared experiences, and you can become instant friends with someone. You love this. I love this. We have something that we can talk about. And there's no, my favorite conversations are the, hey, we're sitting around eating and drinking and we were talking about Fallout. We were talking about whatever for the last 3 hours. You're like, did you do anything else? I'm like, not really. We just kind of hung out and talked gaming and lore and whatever else.
Yeah. That is the spirit of the entire network. That is when I started the network. That was the thing that I wanted to do. And it grew out of. First, I launched the Fallout Lorecast. This is like six plus years ago now. And it took off pretty quickly. It actually did pretty well for itself, pretty fast. And then I launched the Elder Scrolls Lorecast because I was like, well, if I can talk about Fallout, I can talk about Elder Scrolls. And I was still working a full-time job at the time, doing all of this stuff in my extra time. Yep. And within a few months, I had made a lot of contacts with other Fallout creators. And I found out, hey, guess what? These people are really cool. And there were a lot of these newer creators with new projects doing some really cool stuff. And within like 4 or 5 months, I was like, you know, we should probably get together and maybe, you know, if we help each other out, build kind of a network or something, maybe that'll work out better for all of us. And sure enough, it's grown to this thing where it's like all these different games and all these different people, and they all just like coming together and talking about stuff.
Being able to get made fun of constantly, which is what I do. I'm ready for it. I listened to you from very long time, from your beginning. We first met and I was like, he sounds very familiar. And finally, I look it up and I'm like, oh yeah, I've heard him so many times. And John goes, well done, detective. You couldn't figure out the guy that you've listened to for hours was right in front of you. I'm like, sometimes I have a hard time making
it. It's not just that. Also, you couldn't figure out the guy you're talking to who we'd mentioned to you what his podcast was.
The name of the show.
I had looked at his podcast together live on the TV, and you went, oh, I've heard you before.
Like context is everything, right?
Tens of hours.
But is this how you met Springsteen too? We're like, oh, you've got a really good singing voice. Have you ever thought about performing?
You should probably, you should make a band.
Yeah, it happens. But here, let's, I want to know a little bit. I gave a little bit of my background starting the Fallout Orcast and that kind of thing. But I want to know, like, coming to your show, you guys have been doing this for a while as well. I'm sure you've covered a lot. How many episodes are you in now?
Honestly, I think we just recorded 85 the other day.
That's not bad.
We're not even at 2 years yet.
But that's not shabby. Most podcasts, and this is one of those things that I do because I run a network and I used to work in marketing, all that kind of thing. Most podcasts don't last more than 10 episodes.
The funny thing is we got popular just randomly, and then we got a huge boost. Space Marine 2, the video game, came out, and we just hit the Willy Wonka elevator shooting us out the top of the building. It was fantastic. So many new people came in, and these were a lot of people that actually didn't have a background in the actual tabletop game. They only knew it through the video games, and then they found us in the Lorecast. So we have a lot of people getting together that chose wildly different ways to get there, what their backgrounds and stuff were.
Right.
And I love that.
So first of all, I love that your movie reference was from the 70s. We've already established you're the old man. I'm curious because that was a video game. In fact, my experience with Warhammer is mostly video games because I've never played the tabletop stuff. The Dawn of War series, Dark Tide is pretty awesome.
That's awesome.
Space Marine 2 is on my list of things. It's been on sale lately, and I'm like, oh, do I pull the trigger yet? Do I have time to do this?
Cutscenes are so good, dude. It's worth it even just for
that. Space Marine 2 has got a very good story, actually. What's the part about that I would say is good? It's a short, I will knock it with one piece. It's a short game.
I've heard
it's a multiplayer game. It's meant, you can see it's a multiplayer game that has a storyline. but it's a very good storyline. So especially on sale.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the cutscenes are good and they're emotional.
So, yeah. I've read reviews. I've watched some videos on it. I'm like, okay, this is, I'm totally going to enjoy this when I play it, but am I ready? Do I have time yet to devote to this? But my question is, and this has something very similar happens to my shows. For example, when the Fallout TV show came out, boom, the number spiked. When the Rings of Power came out, the Lord of the Rings lorecast, that spiked, right? And it, like, the best marketing for our shows is the mainline like
doing something
company who's running the thing doing something. But I'm curious, because people coming from the video game, they don't know a whole lot about the deeper lore stuff, because I mean, as you mentioned before, 40K is a very old series at this point with lots of lore. I mean, there's lots of different types of Space Marines and there's lots of different aliens and things like that. And if they've played Space Marine 2, then they know, like, this one type of Space Marine. They know
the Tyranids, tip of the iceberg.
You got bug monsters. So did you notice that people, like, were you doing certain topics at the time that people, like, looked up? Did they go to those topics? Were they just, like, down for whatever? Did you notice anything like that?
I'm going to give John props on this, because he keeps us on pact. We had a story arc we want to start with, because the game is based in what's called the Horus Heresy. It's a big civil war. Mm-hmm. They split, all the good guys became, you know, nine legions here, and they split all of their assets basically in the galaxy from man and went at it. And that's the basis of the game. So we kind of started from there and went, hey, we're going to do offshoots, but we're going to keep it in the timeline, and we keep going back so people can enter. If you don't have a lot of knowledge of 40K, we wanted to make it so it wasn't so daunting, because that's one of the things, as somebody that frequents a lot of lorecasts, that going into any other 40K, not just I pat myself on the back, but I can't reach because my arms are too short. But a lot of people had just this huge library of great material, but it was really hard to follow, to get that when am I getting in the pool? Like, I want to see.
I think a one key difference, Tom, that between the shows is that, so with, well, I'll use other things you cover, Fallout's the one I know the best, because one of the most invested in.
Sure.
You've got maybe eight games now, ever.
Of the mainline ones? The mainline ones, there's one, two, three, New Vegas, four. And then 76 is canon, Tactics is canon, according to the most recent announcements from them. So that's seven canon games and four mainline with New Vegas, which is might as well be a canon, like, mainline.
Exactly. Right. So that's what I'm saying. And so whereas in 40K, we get our information from two sources. One, we have novels, of which there are 400. And then you have codexes, of which there's probably 300 to 400, again, of those.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's...
So the difference is that whereas, like there's so much information, so a lot of people are coming to us because... I'm going to name some 40K stuff. If you're super into Death Guard, you've read every book on Death Guard. You know, you owned every Death Guard codex. You've consumed Death Guard all the way through. You know it through and through. But that's one of, I think, 30 factions right now. I have to check the numbers.
28 right now, 20, if you don't count the small factions. Ones.
You then play against someone. Don't count
the small ones.
And there's some offshoots that are...
Yeah, count the small ones is like 74.
I do own an Imperial Agents Army for that record.
There's also, inside those 28 factions, there's a bunch of drop-downs for
there's a lot of options.
A bunch of different options.
Yeah, so what happens is, so for example, you as that Death Guard, that's what I think a lot of our listeners are. You as our Death Guard player who knows Death Guard better than anyone, it's an extreme example. You're that level.
Yeah.
You play against a friend of yours who's got an Imperial Guard army. You're tacitly aware of it. You don't really maybe have the time or the energy to go read the 40 or plus Imperial Guard books. Plus all stuff. That's where I think a lot of our stuff is. So when we, and again, I could be wrong on this. Maybe I've got listeners saying that's, you know, like, you guys do a terrible job of this. But the goal we have in our path is to give enough of a high level overview of each group and each piece, so that when you're going back to the origin of our cast, sitting around with people, having a conversation, you're like, oh, I do know about that. Oh, I heard this thing. Or even more so, if you're sitting there saying, hey, there's 400 books, where do I start?
Yeah.
Well, I heard John and Brad talking about this story. It sounded awesome. I'm going to go pick up Gaunt's Ghosts. I'm going to go pick up
Eisenhower. We get asked that a lot, too. That's one of the biggest things of where should I start? Where should I, what are the best things to read? Where should I enter the lore?
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, I'm super excited about the lore. John's excited about the lore. I'm overly excited. He's in charge of basically putting the baby carrier on me so I don't just run around yelling at everything that's shiny. But I think we carry that over into the cast, because you have to be passionate about whatever you're doing in a lore cast, whether it's, you know, whatever type of game, whatever you're trying to go through. I'm generally excited and or mad if people that listen to ours, they can get me started by Lords of Terra. But yeah, I'm kind of mad just thinking about that, by the way.
Erebus. Yeah.
Oh, God. But you're right, though. You have to be passionate about it. It has to be something that you are willing to devote your time and experience into. So what I find interesting about this is that each of the series that we talk about has kind of this different, the lore is laid out in different ways. So for you, it's like across all these novels and these codexes, and then also in the games and that kind of thing. But for Fallout, it's like, okay, these are the games. This is where most of the lore is. Now there's a TV show.
Which helps.
Which helps. But the games themselves are these huge, like, open world games with all of these characters and all of these different little bits and details and things like that. And then you go to something like Elder Scrolls, and it's similar in that the majority of the lore is the mainline games, but it started long and like in Fallout, the lore from Fallout 1 still feels like it tracks with the other lore later for the most part. There will be people who argue that once Bethesda took over, it wasn't as good and all of that. Of course, people have those kinds of opinions. Yeah. But in Elder Scrolls Arena was basically like, well, how do we make a game in the early 90s, like talk about those gold box D&D games that's pulling from games like that, and we just kind of do our own spin on D&D? And I have some, the more I've studied the way that that storyline plays out, and Lotus, my co-host, and I will talk about this pretty regularly, I have this theory that the lore that came from the very first game is actually them retelling a tabletop playing of D&D.
Yeah.
And the main characters were their playable characters. And I mean, think that might be what happened.
I will get yelled at for this, but I just think everything's rooted in D&D.
I
played D&D in the 80s, and I really, I'm talking D&D 1, and then you know, I call it D&D 1, and then, I mean, I still have
D&D 1.
Yeah, before advanced D&D was a thing, you were playing.
Because AD&D is actually what all I have here. So if I walk out of this room I'm in over to a closet, I've got 20 maybe books of AD&D. I also have 40 books of Rifts. That's actually the only one I played, which no one liked. Everyone loved Rifts and then went to play it. And they're like,
involved, dude.
Oh, your character creation is like 3.5 hours. Palladium made some mistakes. But anyway, it's a side note. But what I'm with you on that, Tom, dead on, is like, it was because D&D just seemed to me get lucky. They wrote a game in the 80s that was in some ways perfect.
Yeah,
like it needed improvement, but the concept was perfect.
Right. And it goes all the way back to the 70s. In fact, you and I are similar ages. And I didn't get a chance to play D&D, just like I didn't get a chance to play Warhammer, because I didn't have any friends playing it. My dad handed me down his D&D manuals from when he would play with his friends in college. And I would pore over those books. I couldn't play them.
Well written.
But I was just like, what are these monsters? And what? Okay, you rolled dice. And I'm trying to figure out, how do you even play this? Because I didn't have anyone tell me how to play it.
Yeah.
And I found that so enchanting to just pull that stuff out of there. And then there's another, like we can draw a direct line, all of this stuff, all the way back to J.R.R. Tolkien, who inspired guys like Gygax with D&D and that kind of thing. So doing the Lord of the Rings lore cast, I talk about a lot of this stuff, and sometimes that stuff comes up. So you can draw a direct line from J.R.R. Tolkien to D&D, and then that branches off to, you know, Warhammer and to Elder Scrolls, and then eventually to Fallout, and then all of that stuff over time. And to go back to my original point, the Fallout series is set up mostly games, yours are set up mostly novels and those kinds of things. Elder Scrolls is interesting because it's different, because we haven't had a mainline game in 14 years, but Elder Scrolls Online,
I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
it's been forever.
Skyrim was like, what was that, 2011?
Yeah.
But after Skyrim came out, Elder Scrolls Online came out, and every year that they've been out, they've released a new zone with new lore and new stories and those kinds of things. And so Lotus and I joke about this all the time, but there's more lore from Elder Scrolls Online than there is from all the other games added up.
Yeah.
At this point. And so we get the same kind of thing, because people will be like, well, I never really got into it because it was an MMO, and it's absolutely a game you could play by yourself. And a lot of people like misunderstand mm-hmm. that. Like most of the time, I just do stuff solo. I just want to get through the stories and mm-hmm. you know, build my character and do fun things like that. I'm not so into the group content as much. But like, if you miss that, you're missing where they've taken lore all the way from the first game, the second game, the spin-off games, yeah. and they've gone deeper into it because they were like, oh, there's the mention of this city in, you know, Arena. And in Arena, it was just like this procedurally generated. Every city looked basically the same. And here, all of a sudden, we get to see it in Elder Scrolls Online, and it's stylized. And there's like a real place you can go with interesting characters, and it fits the race that lives there really well. And there's some really cool side stories about why the buildings look the way they do and all of this kind of yeah. stuff. So well, yeah,
it reminds me of like so the show The Mandalorian. John, yeah. is it Favreau, the director?
Favreau, yeah.
One yeah. of the main things that he did when he was making it was, as he's been going through it, has been saying, I want everyone to go back and go to every, like, basically any ever mention of Star Wars. Let's start trying, basically, let's try to take this like fractured thing, this is all over the place, and bring it back in. And I'm gonna make a very strange reference, but there was a robot chicken. So robot chicken, okay. Star Wars, the third one. One of the people kept saying wizard, I'm bringing it back. And the only reason I laugh is that in
Vader.
Mandalorian season 3 or something, he lands a plane and goes, that was wizard. And my wife had to listen to me laugh for 2 straight minutes and right. had to pause the show because he made a robot chicken reference in a Disney show. And I was just so overjoyed by it. But it is, it's that piece, because when you do that to someone who knows the lore, that puzzle goes together and like in our heart, and we just couldn't be happier.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things that a lot of like, so jumping to Tolkien stuff, yeah. The Rings yeah. of Power has had kind of a mixed reception. Some people really like it. Some people have some fair problems enough. With it, yeah. all of that. And I will agree that there are things they could have done better. But yeah. while watching season 2 and seeing these battles that occur in the Silmarillion, they're not in the yeah. Lord of the Rings. They're not in the Hobbit. They're in the hardest to read book that Tolkien ever put together. Yeah. And his son had to actually put it together and edited it. And, yeah. and there are these epic battles and like the big conflict at the end of the second season. I never expected I would ever see that on a screen. Yeah. Even after getting Lord of the Rings and how good Lord of the Rings was, I was like, yeah. they're never going to cover stuff that was in the Silmarillion. That's ridiculous. And all of a sudden yeah. they did. And I'm like, that's amazing. Like there's a scene where Sauron hoists up, his name fell out of my head. The Smith guy. Yeah. It's going to come to me as soon as we're done talking about this. Mm-hmm. And in the book, it is graphic. Sauron takes a banner, stabs him through the chest, and hoists him up and uses him as his flag, as his battle flag. Yeah. And they had an homage to that in the show where he's like torturing him and he's up at the top of this pole up against yeah. the wall. And it, like that kind of stuff. I'm just like, that's never going to happen. And all of a sudden it does. So yeah, you know,
there's something awesome. About that. It just brings you together. And this is, again, this is because what happens is it's a cool scene either way. So someone who's never seen it or read that book watches that scene and goes, oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And it's great that you do that. And then at the same time, with someone who's read it, like, do you
get so much more, though, like your experience as well? Yeah. So, you know, I want to ask on this. Where do you rank those? Where Fallout versus, I mean, the Lord of the Rings? Where do your adaptations, like, where's your ranking?
Man. Like, my personal rank for what I like, what series I like best, or what type of ranking do you want?
Brad, like, did you offer Len to say Lord of the Rings is the best adaptation ever? Because if he doesn't say that, I think he might lose listeners.
Like, what's, about, are we
go
going
go,
like?
I want to go games. How about that?
Okay,
games,
so okay, are enough. We going like, what is my favorite game? Or are we going like, what is the best adaptation of this lore in a thing?
Adaptation for you that's came out of games right now.
Out of games, like games to something else.
Games in general, yeah. Not, yeah. I mean.
The Fallout TV show hit it really, really hard. Like
that's what was in my mind because yeah. you were saying Easter eggs and stuff. Because I've played through all the Fallout games so many different times, they did a lot of
yeah.
homages and Easter eggs in all of the Fallout the series shows.
Yeah,
I thought that it would like just yeah what both of you were saying. I felt like I got so much more from that series. Because I was like, ooh, I got so excited every time that something was in the background or they were using this.
Yeah, they printed, what's it called when you use a thing to print a physical
3D
item?
Print?
3D print. They 3D printed using the actual like geometry from the games for like the guns and like some of the other little items and things. And so that's why in the show, when somebody's holding up certain types of pistols or whatever, they look like they're from the game because they're actually from the game and they were just 3D printed into reality.
I loved it.
Which
I
is
just,
so
I really
cool.
enjoyed that one. I was just wondering what your thoughts are. Like some of it. Because a lot of times they miss.
Yeah.
And the thing is whether or not something I think hits it out of the park, I do like to support because I want more of them to be made.
Right. I would rather have them swing and miss and then go, okay, well, that didn't work. So let's try again.
And 100%.
Because, I mean, how many times we've got a Fantastic Four movie about to come out this summer, right?
This is the fourth or fifth one that we've had.
11? Yeah.
They've done it so many times and yet they keep trying. And that I'm fine with that because maybe this one will be the one that we're all like, oh, that one's really good. You know, like.
No, I'm with you. And it's funny because as soon as Brad said that and asked me the question, I went to my browser and started Googling like, let's see what their options are. I mean, I will say I'd have to go Last of Us, but man, there's some misses hanging in here.
Oh, yeah. Like the Warcraft movie was.
It's funny. The TV shows are better. The movies we have, Prince of Persia.
I never saw that one. Yeah,
it was. You did yourself a favor.
There's a few different Tomb Raiders.
I think the Ender's Game might be the biggest disappointment of the whole group.
Don't get me started.
It's my
favorite book. Period. Ender's Game is my favorite book out of a billion books that I've read. I watched that movie and I'm like, I'm going to fight somebody about this. Yeah.
When the Street Fighter movie was bad,
play
Street Fighter 2, we're okay with it. We're like, whatever.
But you know,
when Ender's Game was bad.
Did you guys watch the original Mortal Kombat in the theater?
Me too.
100. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was as a teenager when that came out, I was like, okay, I think a part of it was just the soundtrack.
Soundtrack was
amazing.
I was like, okay, this is ridiculous, but. But at the time, I was like,
the era.
Yeah, it felt like a good popcorn movie. It was like, okay, it was a bunch of ridiculousness on the screen. I'm cool with it.
Yeah. And that's one thing. It's fine, but I just buy more laugh.
It's
like,
not great,
I just had,
by
that
any
was
means.
That was entirely me setting up Brad to make him sad. I'm just gonna at some point drop the word
so
Ender's Game
him.
And watch his face just sink a little bit.
I'm still angry right now.
Yeah,
because I have that Ender's Game is in my house, on every single level of my house, there's a copy somewhere, everywhere.
Wow.
I've also read it so many times, but I used to travel, I still travel, but like I used to travel a lot. And certain things I'd want to grab when I'm out. I'm like, I'm going to read this again, you know, just because it gives me that whole remembrance of the first times that I read it. And a lot of games are like that too. I go back, I've played Mass Effect through, I can't even tell you how many times I've played it through because it gives me that whole, I love this setting and it puts me back into the when I first started playing and I was discovering things. I get that again when I get a replay. If I wait a little bit, you know, you still remember what's going to happen, but I love that the replay value of games.
Yeah, you mentioned Mass Effect. I used to do the Mass Effect Lorecast. In fact, I'm on it for the majority of the episode. I just handed it off to another co-host back in December, and they're still going with it. It's still on the network. So if you like Mass Effect, go check it out. You'll hear me through like the first 200 something episodes or however many it was. So yeah, absolutely on the same situation, like in the same place as you with those types of games and series. So here's something I'm curious about. 40K. Hasn't really had a adaptation yet for like movies and TV shows. There's the rumor that we have Henry Cavill working on something for Amazon.
It's happening. Yeah.
What would make that absolutely work for you? Like in your mind, when you picture going and seeing this, what are the key components for it to actually
get John and
be
I
good?
Arguing instantaneously on it. I'm giving mine, screw it. I want one of two things. I want it to be relatable because the world is so big and the main space marines that are like huge, the epic fighting force, I feel is too large for a TV show. There's people that are just regular humans called rogue traders that kind of go everywhere in the galaxy. They get a hall pass where they can go anywhere they want. There's millions of worlds in just the Imperium of man, humans. But, and then there's the others are Inquisitors who are from the Dark Age and they're looking for heresy.
Yeah.
And you can do that also. And both of them would work really, really well. I just want something that connects with as many people as humanly possible. And I don't know if just like the big Marines, which are the poster children for the game.
Right.
The Marines are
Well, it's kind of like in Fallout, you have different characters, and yes, power armor shows up. The Brotherhood of Steel shows up, but that's like, even the character who's the Brotherhood of Steel person is just new. He's not one of the traditionally experienced ones.
Right.
You're coming at it from this perspective of somebody who's new, who's kind of learning the ropes while the audience does as well. And I agree with you. I think that that's going to Tolkien. That's the reason why you start in the Shire, is because that feels like a familiar world. Even though they're hobbits, it feels the closest to our world. And then you get deeper and deeper into the fantasy and you know, all the other deeper stuff. So, yeah.
Really, John? No short joke for that one?
No, I was going to let you just be.
I'm waiting for it. It's like, you identify with the Shire because you're one of the people.
No, because you're a dwarf. We both know that is true.
You're
with the dwarf. But the difference is the Shire's outside, like growing things, doing all that stuff. Yeah, you would take an axe and pick at a wall to get the shiny gems. I know you well enough. Like, it's also.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, the mining's probably bad for the migraines. The sunlight's bad for the migraines. So pick one, you know.
Yeah, just to sit in the dark. You'll be fine.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, my thing is like, so the only, like, again, lifelong Fallout play. The only complaint I actually have in the shift over from Sierra to the Bethesda, that's correct, right?
It was Interplay, it may have been published by Sierra.
There it was. I know there's a Sierra Games logo when I turned it on. I remember that one.
Yeah.
Were they that Black Isle first too?
With it used to be the show was really heavy into the dark humor, or sorry, the game. And Fallout 4 and 3 and 4 have it. Vegas actually gets it. It was good in Vegas. It moves around a little bit.
Because some of the original creators worked on Vegas.
Yeah, that's that would make sense. That's kind of where, like, one of my, so my actual most open complaint about 40K is it, if you read it a certain way, it's incredibly depressing.
Oh, yeah.
Incredibly depressing.
No, it's a dark fascist future where everybody's constantly murdering each other.
And it's the same thing, you know, going into Fallout, I think, in that regard, too, is you could write that game to be just true post-apocalyptic nightmare zone. But it's nice when they go, yeah, look, it's a post-apocalyptic nightmare zone. Don't get me wrong. But you'll randomly go to this place and there'll be a ghoul who's actually funny and is turning into a tree. Awesome. And it's great. And I want, that's my thing of Warhammer, is I'd like to see a bit more like comedic relief brought into it. Kind of like what you saw with The Witcher, actually, in some regards. Mm-hmm. That's where, like, I'd like to see more of a shift into it. And so from the Henry Cavill series, they're going to do something. It'll be epic. I'll watch it no matter what. But I would personally like to see it be less absolute grimdark, set it in a grimdark area. But let's enjoy ourselves a little bit. Because to me, lifelong RPG player, those are the best games, are the ones that are set, you know, the world is ending, blah, 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 or the world has ended. But it's not just, you know, people stabbing each other over a piece of meat. It actually is.
Yeah, you have to do life.
Give me some bits. Give me some actually, and then this bit's a little bit humorous here and there.
Right. I mean, if you want to go, what I want for 40K, I want Firefly in the 40K universe.
Oh, wow. That's a fun idea. That's would you have like a core team of people who are like rogue traders or something?
You could do that with the rogue trader, or you could do it with the Inquisitor. That's why I was, because we have several.
Now that you said it, you could just take the original Firefly series, change it, like, don't even change a script very much, change a few uniforms. If you don't add in the Xenos,
that just works, good. Though. It really does work.
Well, it also makes it more impactful if somebody like anything that's crazy powerful or crazy humongous, or because if you keep the scale on the scale of human beings, then. Yeah. Anytime you get, you know, some dude who's like 12 feet tall in power armor, or you get some gigantic bug or anything like that, all of a sudden you go from like, hey, this episode's us doing normal things, and we land on a planet, and all of a sudden, oh crap, there's a battle coming out and some crazy gigantic thing happens, and that sounds amazing rather than everything's amazing all the time. Well, nothing's amazing.
That's my problem with the Marine thing on that, is I was worried, because that's what they had talked about doing with 40K, is doing something with the Marines and the Horus Heresy. But the problem is that those guys are so much bigger, better, faster, stronger, than everybody else.
It's the difference between the difference, real quick, it's the difference between, like, I don't know, you guys watch the Daredevil Born Again series?
Yeah.
Okay, so my son is 14, so he's old enough to be watching these things and understands, like, the artistic intent of a lot of it, and we have these really cool conversations about it. But one of the things that really clicked for him was when it's Thor and the Hulk punching each other, it doesn't, you don't feel the pain. They're freaking a Hulk and a god.
And a god.
But when it's a dude punching another dude and one of them gets a knife in the shoulder, you're like, oh.
It's somebody you can relate with and absolutely understand what's happening.
Yeah, and every little bit of damage, every little bit of pain adds up, because everybody knows what it's like to like be injured and to know how hard it is, even just getting, you know, a poke in the arm. Heck, you fall down and skin your knee, you don't want to bend your knee, you know, like it doesn't take that much for us to feel
my favorite pain. Shows and movies is still the amount of people that just shake off the gut shot,
right? Yeah.
You get shot in the stomach, you're like, really? You're not running around. They always just go, it's just the flesh wound here. Yeah. You're like, no, it's you're going to die, man. I'm not going anywhere.
Right. Yeah,
I love.
Big thank you to our sponsor for today's podcast, Call of Dragons. Call of Dragons is an original, immersive, and epic fantasy world taking place in the world known as Tamaris. Team up with the elves, orcs, celestials, goblins, and countless other magical creatures to build your vast army. Dive into your own fantasy city with unique decor for each faction. Arrange your city as you see fit and build the unique fantasy metropolis of your dreams. Once you leave the safety of your own city, prepare for battle alongside your scary but friendly behemoth. Command your behemoth to aid you in battle. A variety of epic behemoths are scattered across Tamaris. Powerful giant bears, venomous hydras, lightning-fast thunder orcs, and terrifying flame dragons. Work together with your alliance to defeat them and bring them under your command, then unleash them in battle. Oh, and please don't forget to name them. Train up your heroes with unique skills that can turn the tide of battle in an instant. Unleash powerful abilities to wipe out your opponents with a huge array of equipable magic artifacts, each with their own unique skills. Turn invisible, move at astounding speed, teleport, or heal your units in an instant. Equip your heroes with an artifact that suits their abilities and unleash artifact skills to dominate the battlefield. Call of Dragons has true 3D terrain that shapes the gameplay. Tamaris is a land of mountains, rivers, valleys, tundra, and countless other features. Not only is it beautiful, it's also essential to use your terrain to your advantage. Build your city on a plateau to make yourself impervious to attack. Set up an ambush in a mountain valley to wipe out enemy forces, or occupy the high ground and cut all would-be invaders down to size. And that's just scratching the surface. In Call of Dragons, combat isn't just a matter of numbers. With the right strategy, you can turn any situation to your advantage. All these features come together to create an incredible fantasy battle experience that allows you to wage war your way. So if you're ready to jump into the fantasy world of Tamaris, download Call of Dragons today on PC or mobile by using my link in the description.
A friend of mine was the stunt coordinator for one of the John Wick movies. And like, I love him, but I'm also like, dude, you know, you can't just pull up your suit jacket when someone shoots you and stop a bullet.
Right. It's a Kevlar suit.
It was super cool. I watched it and I loved it.
Right.
But because that's one of the things I love is when you watch a movie, like so one of my rules in all things sci-fi, fantasy, whatever it is, never explain it to me. Because the second you add the world of physics, I now can criticize you and rip you apart.
Right. You're looking for every little hole. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's easy to do. I'm watching John Wick and I'm walking out like, wait a minute. Like, I can't move my arm that fast. How is he stopping a bullet by moving his, like, is he fastened the speed of sound?
Again, right. Like, people just shaking off.
Superman? That changes the movie.
You're like, hey, man, you just got a knife buried into your leg. And you're like, that was like 10 minutes ago.
I'll walk it off. Yeah, fine. It'll be fine. Watch. Yeah. Any of us go get surgery and it takes us weeks. Weeks.
Well, I was just going to say, knife in the leg. You know what it feels like? Watch Ricky Bobby. Watch that. Watch Talladega Nights. That's a very accurate representation of getting stabbed in the leg.
Right.
It's just those guys just shake things off. You're like, hey, man. Again, the gut wound is my favorite, though. They're always like, it's just, I got shot in the stomach. That's no big deal. You're like, that is such a big deal.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. But I mean, to bring it back to what the video games, that kind of stuff. That's always the challenge, though, with a lot of the video game world, because these are supposed to be superheroes and Superman and all that stuff. And 40K has a little bit of a luxury in that there's been a lot of genetic engineering. So it's set in the year 41,000. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've had some advances in that period of time.
Well, what does Space Marines well is the YouTube series. I forget the name.
Astartes.
And then that same guy went on to do the short that was part of the other video game stuff from Amazon. Yeah. I forget what that series was called.
Both of those, man. Brad, you did a cast on it.
The Hammer and Bolter guy?
No. The show.
The Astartes guy.
The creepy Pac-Man thing. The really good.
Secret Level.
Yeah. So I've watched both of those. And maybe it's because they're shorter little snippets. It's not a full-time show. So you can go, okay, these are badass dudes. Mm-hmm. And this is how badass they are. Watch them kick everybody's butts. But look, they're not impervious because now they're up against this thing. And now it's a real challenge. And that's cool because you can just put it's like reading a comic book and then putting the one issue of a comic book down and then instead of picking up a novel.
Yeah.
Secret Level might have been the thing that hit it out of the park for the feel of what 40K is.
Yeah.
That whole feel was so like the grim, dark. I mean, in 40K, it's kind of everything sucks. Everybody's at war. Everybody's life kind of blows. You're just deal with it. But like these guys are so much better. And we have a hard time on the tabletop because it's going to be a balanced game. But in the lore, you send that group of Marines in and they're fighting against all those commando type troops. And they're basically a biker gang and they just decimate them.
Right. Right. That's like dropping a nuke. You might as well just drop a nuke on the biker gang.
They had no chance against those guys. Yeah. You know?
But that's an interesting thing. We talk about lore, though. And it's an area I do think is fascinating because what we're doing from a lore standpoint is a bit more divergent than I think a lot of other stuff out there, because Warhammer 40K is a tabletop game that you don't even have to know the lore to play. You have no lore knowledge whatsoever. It's just honestly, it's a math game at its core.
Right. Well, D&D is the same way. You don't necessarily need to know, okay, this is the land of Faerun and you're in the city of Neverwinter and they have a history.
Exactly.
You don't need to know all
that. But what I think is that when we talk about lore casts and we talk about the people listening to us, it's the different group. It's the people who actually do find, and I always feel, I don't like using the word escape because it sounds like we're trying to get away from it. Like, I mean, but it is for me, there's a mental benefit to me in gaming. I can feel it and I experience it. Like when I'm too busy to play any video games during like for like a week or 2 weeks, I am testier. Even though I'm doing other things, I'm doing my jujitsu, I'm working out, doing these things, it's not the same. If I can find an hour, 2 hours to sit down and play a video game, I find I'm in a much better mental space than I am normally. And that's when I use the word escape, but I don't mean it as a negative. I mean,
it's almost like a recharging. Yeah. It's like a, I mean, there's a word that it comes, this doesn't mean relax. It doesn't mean recess. There's a word that basically means to enjoy doing something and it actually recharges you, refills you.
Yeah. And that's where, like, I think
when somebody's yelling at their stuff, speakers right now.
It's fine. And I think that's all the stuff where we're interacting with and talking about. That's where it really is that piece of, hey, when I do this, I'm not saying I should do it 20 hours a day because don't.
No. Oh my God. Like I would never,
we've all
I was like back when Twitch was new, I was working a full-time job before I did podcasts. I was working a full-time job and I committed to streaming after work in the evenings for 4 or 5 hours, 6 days a week.
The game experience though, is the problem.
And eventually I gave up on it because I actually ended my company went through a merger. Everybody on my side got, I had to go find a new job basically. But after 6 months of that, I was building a community. It was going well. But now looking at streamers and especially the big ones, I mean, they're making a ton of money, but they have to be there 8 to 10 hours, 12 hours a day, every day. They're chained to their seat. Like at least
not getting the joy from the game.
Right. And you can't play
for the story.
Right.
You don't see a lot of people, especially streaming. Some do, but like a lot of times, man, you just want that feel. I play a lot of RPG stuff, so like I really, really enjoy that one-on-one feeling of discovery and moving through the story.
Oh, amazing.
I'm one of the things. So let's talk about the ways that you engage with these things. One of the ways that I love to engage is not min-maxing on purpose, is instead to come up with a character, an idea of who my character is and why they make their decisions, and then make my decisions regardless as if it messes something up or not. And then I just have to live with the choices. So for example, recently I do streaming, but only every so often because it's fun and I like to chat with the community and it's a good time. It's not because I have to do it for a living. It's really like it's job adjacent because I do this full time, but it doesn't, it's really just for me to have fun. But we had in the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, we had a competition for people to give us game challenge ideas. And the one that won was that I had to play Skyrim as a basically a grumpy drunk monk. So I had no weapons, no armor. I had to only use like my punches to fight things, which was hard to begin with. But then anytime I came across a drink, I had to drink it. So I wasn't against stealing it from people. So I was constantly drunk. My stamina was always low. And on top of it, I was also always grumpy. And so I was homeless. So the way I played it was I spawned into the world. I went to the closest town. So it was like Riverwood. I got a quest. Went and did the quest. Came back. Turned in the money. Turned in the quest. They gave me 50 gold. And I was like, well, that's not enough gold. So I guess I have to beat them up. So then I started a fight, got kicked out of town, and I had to run away before the guards got found me. Had to find another town to go to because I couldn't go back there.
Yeah.
And it continued until it was a permadeath until I died. And had I been playing on my own, I wouldn't have done a permadeath because it was just fun for the stream. But I would have seen like, okay, can I actually continue playing this character with this mentality and actually further through the quests? And yeah, it's going to mess stuff up, but maybe it's going to be crazy. I don't know.
Well, but that's the joy of it, because we can. I mean, this is like, candidly, life is full of consequences. You have to, you know, and we all make choices. All these things happen, et cetera. Video games aren't. Video games have a reset button.
Right.
It's awesome.
It's funny. I can't play evil. It's so crazy in games.
Most people can't. Like 70% of people who are polled cannot do an evil playthrough.
I've tried to. Like, I'm going to do the evil run of this. And then I get in and I'm like, I don't like this at all. I mean, I just started restarting
games.
I restarted my BG3 multiple times now. If a roll in honor mode, a roll goes bad, or recently one of the tieflings died, and I was like, nah, I'll just redo the game. I'm like, this, I don't like when bad things happen. I'm like, life is hard. Right. I want my video game to be all the good things happening.
Yeah. And sometimes I do that too. So like, it depends on like, I'll have a different goal. Am I doing this because I want everything to work out so I get to see all the story and all that stuff? Or am I doing this because screw it, let's just see what happens. Oh God, that just happened. I guess I'm just going to deal with that. You know, and so it changes how you
play. I will say, I mean, part of that also comes down to the video game itself, because one of the series I always loved was Fable.
Yeah,
like one, Fable two, was great. Really great games.
Yeah.
And to Brad's point, you can play those games evil, but you don't like feel, because some games you play evil and you feel bad about it. Like those ones you didn't.
It was silly. Fable was very silly.
Yeah, that's why, because it was still so. Even KOTOR in the evil, because you were evil, but there were constantly punishments for it. So it was kind of like, it was almost like it was a nice little moral story. Mm-hmm. But some games, you're like, I'm evil. Like, cool, you're a warlord now. Like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, so I just get child soldiers and murder them all. Yeah.
With their Wookiee best friend.
Yeah, I don't love doing this. Can I? I think I'm just going to reset now.
It was a good twist, though. KOTOR had a great...
What I'm getting is that I like the games like that that are more kind of a bit goofier. Even like Fallout. Like, you could have some fun in Fallout 2. Fallout 2 was...
Oh, you could do some bad, bad things in Fallout 2.
One of the best things you can do in Fallout is get really good at sneaking and then just put grenades in people's pockets and then walk away. Like,
walk away.
She's like, oops, there you go.
I don't think I've ever played Fallout 2 and not murdered every single mob family in New Reno.
Think about New Reno. One of the things I really like, and well, you know all of these because you've done Fallout lore for a long time. I love the fact that bad stuff will happen after you do something good, and then you'll go back and you'll find out something completely terrible happened because of your good act.
That's the best thing. Like, I love a good game at the end where they give you, hey, here's a recap of all your
acts. Love that.
Oh yeah,
here's everything you ever did and here's what it did for them, and it's just like, oh
yeah, right. Right. Well, I had good intentions.
I love when you also get the thing that you forgot, you know what I mean? You get the screen of, you know, as they're going through this and this and this, and then you go, oh yeah, I did not fix this, son of a bitch. Whoops-a-daisy. Sorry guys, life's not great for you right now.
Yeah. So one of the things that a lot of people in the Bethesda community, people who like Fallout and Elder Scrolls, debate is as Bethesda has had control of Fallout, and they've always had control of Elder Scrolls, but as the games have become more modernized, they've become more streamlined. And some of that's good, and some of it not as good. Depends on who you ask. But one of the things that changed is that in the older games, in games like Morrowind, for example, you could kill essential NPCs accidentally, even. And it would give you a notification that said, like, you know, the fates have been severed, blah, 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 or whatever. So you knew if you continued playing on that, maybe those quests would never be able to be finished. but you can't do that in Skyrim. And with
Morrowind, oh god,
yeah, well, the Oblivion remake,
a lot of F around and find out moments where right. you're like, oh
yeah,
that's I'm out of huge portions of the game.
Right. So I'm curious because the Oblivion remake is rumored, like there's a big trailer that's dropping tomorrow as we record this. So everyone knows we recorded this weeks ahead of time, so we don't know yet.
Yeah.
But it might shadow drop tomorrow. I don't know if they're going to change any of that for Oblivion, but they're working on Elder Scrolls 6.
I forgot about that.
And one of the things that we're really hoping for Elder, at least Lotus and I and some of our community, is that they allow you to make those kinds of decisions. And I think it would be really cool to even just have a toggle in the settings to be like, can you kill essential NPCs and ruin your quests? Yes or no. And if you choose yes, you just got to deal with it. You just like, sometimes you just do something and then at the end of the game, you go, well, maybe I can't even finish the game. But if you do, you go, well, there's a whole side of things over there that I can never do because that person's dead.
It also makes it easier when you're like, I've got all these open active quests. What if I just kill the guy who gave it to me?
Right. Oh, cool.
It's completed.
Weirdly enough, I don't know why it made me think of that with stuff you're talking about, you know, getting attacked. I miss the old, super old school games when guards were just like the worst thing that could ever happen to you is you angered the guards. like the Ultima games. I'm really going back on this.
Yeah, we're going 80s, 90s now. Yeah.
But like that used to be when you did something wrong in town. The guards, by the way, the guards should definitely be the main characters. They were more powerful than anyone. But the guards would just beat the crap out of you.
I mean, yeah, it's just, but it is true. I mean, like, I think gaming's, again, it's just different eras and different styles, obviously. I mean, I still, to this day, I built a couple of years ago, I rebuilt my computer. I put a GeForce 3070 in there. I've got an Intel 12 or whatever it is, the newest Intel. I did all this stuff. I build the thing up, turn it on. It's beautiful. I load DOSBox and I start playing Gateway to the Savage Frontier because while building it, some memory triggered in the back of my brain of, oh yeah, I start thinking about a Vorpal sword. It was something silly like that. And then you go, yep, let me go play this instead. I'm like, I could have been playing, you know, Cyberpunk, but no, I'm going to open up DOSBox and see what DOSBox looks on this computer. Oh, it runs smoothly, turns out.
Right. We all do it, you know, like I go back
you can't help it, but it is because there's an homage to some of those older ones, and I think the best games are the ones that keep some of that there, you know. Warhammer as a tabletop game, our rules have changed a lot over the years, but the core, well, second edition core are still there. First edition Warhammer 40k was like loopy, like there actually was more like D&D. You had a 20 sided die, an 8 sided die, right? But it was D12, a D8, D4, D6. I don't know if it was a D20.
You had a D12.
It was D12. Yeah, all this stuff. They were like, hey, that's a bit much. And they pared it down. Mm-hmm. But the rules at their core, if you played the game in like 1991, and you were to pick the game up now, are not that different. And that's because they realize you know what you do is you build on the bits that work and the bits that don't. Mass Effect, I always joke about Mass Effect. Mass Effect, the whole series is incredible. But the very first game where I had to land on a planet, that stupid truck, and drive that stupid truck around, drove everyone insane.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, one appreciated that. When that went away in Mass Effect 2, right. I think that was one of the, like, I couldn't have cared less about the other improvements. That one improvement, I'm like, this is a much better game. Thank you for doing that.
Yes. I wish they had more. They did a decent job in some of the new games, but like a lot of the games nowadays don't have as much just hidden text. There's so many like small text and stuff. If you're going through a Morrowind, if you're going through the old Baldur's Gate, like BG2 and stuff, but BG3 is an amazing game. But like a lot of the games, there's so much text and books and reading and stuff that you can get into as deep as you want in the games. Fallout, man, I'm still going to Fallout 2. Fallout 2 just had so many little random things that you could read about. You could get so in depth into what was actually happening in other places. I love getting in a wild whirlwind of nonsense where you're like, oh yeah, I haven't even thought about doing the main quest because I've been trying to find out everything that's happening with this particular section, or what happened in God, I can't even remember the company now.
Is it, so it, is the viewpoint, is it third person? Is that what Fallout 2 is?
It's isometric third person, yeah.
So the example, so for Warhammer, we had Rogue Trader come out last year.
Yeah, that's another one on my list of like, I keep seeing Rogue it on sale and I'm like.
Oh yeah, I was going to play that. Don't play Space Marine 2. Play Rogue Trader.
Okay.
It's especially for what you like, astronomically better
game. And it's made by Owlcat. Those are the guys that made the Pathfinder games, Pathfinder Kingmaker and Pathfinder Wrath of the Righteous. Yeah. And they have, for anything they do bad, they make up for it with a huge amount of storytelling and a lot of lore in everything. You can get as much as you want.
What I would say about that, them, Mass Effect has this as well. Fallout has it. If you just take your character and you put them somewhere, you can watch the text around you occur.
Yeah.
And it's something amazing about that because they were funny. Same with me, to make even a weirder reference, all of the Blizzard games where, you know, you'd click on the character and you kept clicking on them. They would say different things.
Zug, yeah, leave me alone.
Like, please stop touching me. Right. Like eventually it was always funny. Right. I love that.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I will tell you, that's in Rogue Trader. Has that, like there's a bunch of just conversations happening. You just
all over the place. Somewhere. Yep.
Yeah.
My routine every day is I'm a morning person. I get up around 5 o'clock in the morning. It's where I am.
Yeah, I can't do that either.
Yeah. I've been doing this since like 2001. So just the way I am as a person. And what I do is I have some coffee and I'll usually just play video games as I wake up and drink coffee. Mm-hmm. But that's why I love games like that, because I can just, while drinking my coffee, I'll just sit there.
Yeah.
Actually, my work computer is off the side of my real computer. So maybe I'll just look at some work emails and I'll just watch the text scroll and you just get these little laughs. So like, it makes me smile because there's an engineer who's probably listening to our cast.
Yeah.
Who put time into that.
Right. Right. Yeah. So what you're describing is using the game to take your mind and put you in a situation you'd rather be in than the current situation you're in. Right. Like, I have to go to work, but I could be over here. But I think that's also one of the reasons why a lot of people listen to our shows is because while they're driving in a car, while they're at work, while they're working out, whatever, they'd rather be mentally in a different space, a place that they love, even if it's terrible future, it's somewhere that is more interesting and a place that they'd rather be thinking of. Also, you mentioned all like the terminals and all the other extra stuff in the Fallout games. And the reason why your audience goes to you is because they haven't read the 400 novels. The reason why the Fallout audience comes to me is because so many people will just skip reading the terminals.
Much good stuff.
Yeah, most of the people who play these games, at least on their first playthrough, will mainline the games and they don't read all the extra stuff. And then they'll go, there was that quest where that crazy thing happened and I didn't read all the details. I wonder what the actual story was about that. Mm-hmm. And then they go listen to my show and they're like, I get it.
So, I think you've had me play different playthroughs. I said I've listened for a while now to your Fallout podcast, and I'd go back and be like, wait a minute, I don't remember that the way you're saying it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back there and do another playthrough specifically because of this.
Yeah.
Well, that's I think where a lot of the lore casts come into play is because, you know, for whatever reason, we did consume it all. And I'm happy to tell it to you and I'll make you have to go back and read it.
Right.
500 page novel, like for the Warhammer fans listening to this, I'm like, man, that invasion of soul books, the very end, the Siege of Terra books in Warhammer are, I mean, they make Tolkien look like freaking I don't know, like a comic book, like the amount of words in those. I think the audio book for one of them is like 16 hours.
Yeah
you're just like, they get rough. And so that's what this is. It's like, hey, I can tell you some of the stuff in there. Some of it's action scene too. Some of it's like, hey, I'm just going to skip the whole, like there's 30 pages here of action scene, which I can sum up with team A beat up team B.
Right. Right. Yeah. This is what they did. This is why
they are rolling the dice pretty hard. The 40K universe, it's called the Black Library. They're, selection of books are really good. What the shit that I just listened to? Really good.
You get some in there where you're like, I mean, I've fallen asleep to a few books over the years reading them, but they've got other ones where it's like, yes, I'm not sleeping tonight. Yeah. You know, and that's sort of, and that's, I mean, that same thing for you with gaming. I mean, there's times where, you know, I did go to work tired because I hit a piece of Mass Effect, Fallout, Skyrim, where it's like, nah,
just one more quest. Just one more quest. I just got now I just finished that. I got to take this back to this person. Okay, might as well do that. Oh, I got in a big fight. Okay, well, now I got to beat them up. Yep. So I got to keep fighting.
Yeah, gotta do this. Because, I mean, I think like you, I don't play games online. It's part of it. Just, I think it's just an age thing. I just
I do sometimes. It's in the case of Elder Scrolls Online, it's more of the like getting together with a regular group to do the trials every week and like that kind of thing, that as opposed to just like, hey, let's go run around and do some stuff while we hang out. You know, like that's a lot easier to manage. Yeah.
Like we're like I've and this is, but also that's one of the joys of having like being in this community is, for example, I played Magic the Gathering when it came out in, I want to go with 95, 90,
it was the mid 90s.
Somewhere in that one, played it, put it down, and then never came back. And then years later, you know, meeting people are like, you got to play Magic again. I'm like, oh, okay, let's go see what it is. And I watch it happen. Like, I have no idea what you guys
are doing. This is a completely different thing.
Those cards, but I have no idea what's happening here. Why are you not tapping your mana? Like, what's happening? Like, I don't.
But totally different.
I also, just because I don't do it, when I talk to them, they'll tell me more about it. I love hearing about it. I love it. Like, there's so many. I haven't played D&D. I haven't played any of the editions of D&D since Wizards of the Coast bought them. Not out of some weird protest. I just haven't had time, you know, to do it. But still read the books. So talk to my friends who play. Still learn as much as I can about it. Not even in an effort to go play. Purely in a like, hey man, this stuff's cool and I'm passionate. Tell me about it. Tell me about it. And it's just fun.
Well, that's a really cool place to kind of wrap this up as we're getting kind of at the end of the show. I just thought it'd be fun to have just like one more question. We've already, we talked about 40K being like a TV series or a movie, and they have lots of cool games that are out there. Is there a game type or subject that they haven't done that you're like, oh, this would be really cool?
See, we've got first person,
right?
We've got adventure.
You get to be Space Marines. You get to be tactical, you know, over the top kind of games.
I want to be part. I want to play as elves.
Yeah, I was about to say. I know what Brad's going to go with this.
100%
Yeah, like, they
crazy space magic.
Anything from a different
kind of
perspective? Because there was is it Fire Warriors that the Tau game, Brad, that came out?
Fire Warriors, the Tau game, but they've never done anything with Eldar, which is space elves.
And so that would be, that one is probably there.
What style game would you, would it be, what, a tactical game? Would it be like a combat game?
RPG.
It's just an RPG, but you are in their world from there. Yeah,
as one of them.
As one of them. I'd like to play, we've got very little, in the 40K, we see a lot of the Xenos races that aren't human centric, and we've got, we don't have a ton of books and lore from their perspective. It's always the
they're the enemy.
You look at it from what they do, you don't get a ton of why they're doing it. You get some from their codexes, because you get a rule book for each faction. So if you get the elf rule book, you know, they'll have stories about them, but we don't get as much in games or books. Like, the novels and stuff are usually written from someone else's perspective, even when they're dealing with that race.
That makes sense.
I mean, the one for me, honestly, is I want to see them unravel some stuff. One of the challenges in the 40K universe is they start a lot of storylines that they don't finish.
There's so many cliffhangers out there.
And right, I would like to see something, like, to me, like, there's nothing better than when someone finally kind of explains something. We've actually had some of this in 40K recently, where they've actually, like, some of the new novels have filled in, like, 30-year-old gaps in the lore. And it's like, oh, you know, like, and it's kind of a cool way to see it. And that's something that I'd like to see more of. Like, I will say, so for example, the Fallout TV show, focusing on that final bit of, hey, how did we actually get here? I also watched the show Silo on Amazon. That same thing of like, I like, just, you don't have to unravel all the mysteries of the universe, but after 40 years of writing universe mysteries, it's okay if we close a couple loops here and there. That would be the game. So to me, it would be actually like the Rogue Trader game would actually be the best way to do it. That style of that, they said the third person, whatever.
CRPG, like a group.
RPG, third person outside, where it is someone, and as part of the core of the game, they're actually closing some loops that I've had bouncing around in my brain, because what I think they were doing with 40K was they were trying to set up what we call narrative. So what you can do in Warhammer, as nice as we've got all my, I'm going to just call them figurines. I'm not sure the proper term is, but we have our figurines.
They're miniatures, man.
I like figurines. It's more fun.
Figurines makes no sense.
We can just call them dolls.
I want to make it fancy.
Dolls
good? It's fancy. Fine. Think about miniatures. And we can play what's called a narrative game where I'm saying, oh, this is, I'm going to do the invasion of such and such, yeah, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And they write this one. But the problem is, these storylines never close. Mm-hmm. And so like we get constant stuff in our Discord, which, you know, I love our Discord, right. But hey, can you tell a story about these guys? And in my head, I'm like, hey man, I don't know if you realize it. Those guys are like 11 paragraphs.
Right. No, I get the same thing. People right. are like, yeah. People are like, hey, it'd be really cool if you could do, I'm from this state. Could you do a episode about what happened in Fallout in the state of Minnesota or something like that? And I'm like,
it was cold.
Nothing. Maybe there's a sentence somewhere that admits that Minnesota existed, maybe. But all the time, people are like, oh, they're hungry for stuff. Mm-hmm. But if there's just nothing there, I can't do an episode about it other than just like, oh, there was this one line of conversation in this one game and that was it.
Actually, let me ask you this, because I don't know this. Do we know what happened to the NCR?
So according to the TV show, canon. So
before the TV show.
Did
so we know what happened to the NCR?
There is no, so the NCR shows up in New Vegas, right? New Vegas was written by some of the same people from Fallout 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And New Vegas has no official canon ending. In fact, Todd Howard has said that they're doing the best they can with the TV show to allow that to still be ambiguous.
Cool. Okay.
So we don't know. So even in season two, they're going back to Vegas, to New Vegas.
Yeah.
But from what we've seen at the end of season one, the end of season one, and then some of the pictures that are coming out from the filming, it looks like New Vegas is like not doing so well. But we've seen NCR soldiers, we've seen Legion, we've seen a number of these different factions, some different people from other vaults. Like we've seen a variety of different stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty sure the thing that they're actually going to show us will be able to be rationalized as, well, did these people win this or did these people win this? We don't really know.
Control the dam, guys.
They're all still there. Right. Yeah. So like regardless of the ending, if everyone's still there, then maybe it rules out one or two endings, but it doesn't necessarily definitively say that but that's the other thing is that like you could say, well, oh, the Legion wiped the NCR off the map in Nevada.
Right.
Or Nevada. Everyone gets on me. It's Nevada. Yeah,
but I was about to correct you. I used to live Nevada. Out there. I lived in California and I go out to Nevada a lot. And it's not Nevada. It's Nevada.
I thought, no, somebody corrected me as maybe I'm just confused.
Nevada? Now. No, Nevada. It's Nevada. I don't actually,
I'm not waiting on this. Yeah.
Anyway, make a phone call. Anyway, yeah. But like just like with season one, they were like, oh, the city, their capital got blown up.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the faction's gone. Like, if somebody all of a sudden nuked DC, would we all just all not be here as Americans still? Like,
Brad seen Red Dawn in the theater.
In the theater, the original. Thank you very much. Wolverines.
So that's my perspective on all that stuff. But there you go. Yeah, this will be fun. We'll have to get together again sometime in the future and kind of
course, this is great.
Maybe especially once we get like a season two of Fallout or like the 40K show comes out and we kind of talk about it. Maybe you guys can fill in some details on stuff because I've watched lore videos, I've listened to some of your episodes, but I definitely don't know enough to be like, okay, this is everything that's happening once I see the show.
We're at episode 85. Well, 85 hasn't released yet. Sorry, we've recorded 85. I lose track of what's out because we record them, I edit them, I load them, and then they just sit, and as Tom knows, it sits in the queue and it goes, oh, that one's live, okay.
Yeah.
But what happens is, I remember when I first started doing, I'm probably saying them for you, when I first started doing the cast, my wife says, well, how long are you gonna do this for?
Right.
What do you mean? She goes, not in a bad way, she just meant like, well, how many episodes can you really do? I'm like, oh, it'll outlive both Brad and I.
Right. This can go on forever.
I will die before we run out of ideas. And that would be if they stopped producing content for the game.
Right now.
Right. Yeah.
Right now. Yeah. I would have to teach my son's not even six. I'd have to teach him how to podcast
to
keep this thing going because there's that much content. So and I'm sure. I mean, for you, even with like the limited number of games, you're
still
200
stuff. I can tell a story about every single quest line in every single game, and still have other stuff.
What are your top two?
What are your games?
Games. Like, what do you go by? And not just like, you know, the actual thing. What are your, like, go back? What are your top two?
My go back to? It depends. It depends on when you ask me this question. Like right now, I've gone back to Skyrim. I've been doing these challenge playthroughs. I've been modding the heck out of it. I've got over 500 mods, and I've been trying out all of these different, like, I've increased the graphics to the point where it feels like a modern game again. But then it also adds other stuff in, and some of it is actually really good content from other creators, you know. So Skyrim is an easy to go back to game because the loop is so satisfying. You go somewhere, you meet somebody, you go on a quest, you go in a dungeon, you beat up things in the dungeon, you get some cool stuff, you continue on somewhere else, something happens along the way. You know, all of that works out really well. I find that easier to go back to than something like Fallout 4, because Fallout 4 is from a specific protagonist rather than from an unspoken hero. And I love the game, but I find it a little bit more like I get railroaded back into the story of me playing this character rather than being who I want to be. All of the Elders, like the more recent Elder Scrolls and the Fallout, I jump back into the Fallout games.
I'll ask a fun one then.
Outside of that, I go back to things like The Binding of Isaac. I don't know if you've ever played The Binding of Isaac. It's like you're a creepy baby and you shoot your tears at things. And it's like, it's a roguelike. You should look it up. It's, I don't know, 12 years old at this point, but it's one of those games that's a roguelike. So every time you play it, it's different, but you can also unlock different powers and everything. You know, you were talking about sometimes you want to go play a game, not because it's hard, but because it's just familiar and comfortable. Well, that game can be really hard, but if you get the right powers and everything kind of doubles up, all of a sudden you're just obliterating everything on the screen every time you move into a new screen. So that's my, like, I'm just chilling out, listening to probably a podcast about some lore about something while doing some, playing that on the screen, because I don't have to pay as much attention as if I'm in an RPG.
I'll ask you another different one too. I always like, what's the funniest game you've ever played?
Funniest? That's a tricky question.
Because we're all old enough to play back when they really made games funny.
Yeah, like what was the pirate game with Guybrush Threepwood?
I was immediately going to
those games were super funny.
The Monkey Isles,
Monkey Island,
Escape from Monkey Island,
Space Quest. I remember playing Space Quest.
Yes. Oh, Space Quest was amazing.
The Space Quest games, but yeah, you're right. Fable was super weird and funny in fun ways. Mm-hmm. Funny is tricky to do sometimes for games.
That's why, because it's something that I think we've lost a lot recently. That's actually why I think about it when I go
back. It's hard.
Yeah, like the Monkey Island games. There's a whole series of those. Like, all right, Leisure Suit Larry was stupid, but like there's a whole.
Yes, there it is. It's the same company too.
I know it was the same company. I mean, the graphics, but like you'd had, like there was an era of gaming that was this like real goofy style. Mm-hmm. Oh, those elements are like, come on, bring it back. Those things, and maybe we'll have listeners will make comments to us about like, oh, you should check out such and such. It's like that because I miss it.
They're more likely to be indie games. So there are some, like, I can't remember the names, but there are some indie games that I've played, just picked up on like Game Pass, and I'm like, what's this? And I'm like, oh, that's really funny. And then you know, you play it for 5 hours, you're done. And
Outer
then,
Worlds. There you go. That's one that's more.
I never finished Outer Worlds.
That's a wacky game.
Even the expansion was great. Yeah. Outer Worlds. No, there we go.
Like I got it.
There was tragic.
Yeah,
funny.
But funny. Yeah. Something. Yeah. I think it was like everything felt too closed in. When you're in a zone, you knew you were in that zone.
Yeah, that was the knock on it.
I'm thinking of old games again still, because it, like my favorite story game was Planescape Torment.
My brother played that so much. My little brother got into that when we were in high school, and I would ask him like, "How's the game?" And he was like, super weird. He wouldn't tell me much about it, but he was like, it's kind of cool. He kept going back to it because he really liked it, I guess. But
it just had so much in-depth story, but it also could change quite a bit because the game centered on you, period. Doesn't matter whether you were good, evil, neutral, whatever. Like, you lived like so many lives and you're finding them out. You're discovering your past selves and everything else. And it's just, I really enjoyed. I like the longer games, where they have the tons of lore.
Yeah. Okay. I'll have to think about the whole, like, what else is funny out there? Because it's been a while. But that's a good
tough.
Point. Yeah, that's a good one.
It's a tough one. It's something that I think I think there's a market for it. And again, I just also challenge more to listeners. They're like, hey guys, if you've got stuff, I mean, obviously Tom has a Discord. We have a Discord. Come in there. Tell us. There's nothing. I would take more joy in than that.
Yeah. So to wrap this up, how can people check out your stuff? How can they get involved?
We are obviously we're the 40K Lorecast. We're a podcast, so you can find us on any podcasting platform: Spotify and iTunes, Xbox. Apparently, I learned that one about episode 30. You can actually listen to us on Xbox and got a lot of comments.
We had no idea too. That was so hilarious. Yeah.
But additionally, we also have a website, the40klorecast.com. You can just go there and there's links out to it. We have a Discord. It's easier to find our Discord via show notes or the website, because it's Discord, I think, gg@40k. I'll tell you right now. Something. Actually, I should have checked this ahead of time.
Yeah, just look for the link.
So it is Discord. It's Discord gg40klc. Or go to our website and click in.
Just click the link. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then Tom, for our listeners, how do they find you?
Yeah. So all of the shows on the network at robotsradio.net. So by the time they're hearing this, you guys will be on there as well. You'll also be on our Discord, and there's of course links. You could even just search Robots Radio Discord and you'll find it.
Yeah.
And then my shows, the ones that I'm currently hosting, are the Fallout Lorecast, the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, and the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. And the Lord of the Rings Lorecast is a lot of fun, because the whole premise from it from the beginning was like, people bounce off of the Silmarillion. They'll watch the movies, or they'll read the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, and then they'll try to read the Silmarillion. They'll be like, this is like the Old Testament. I can't do this. And so that's where the premise for the show came out. It was like, I can explain this to people. I can help them understand and get through this book. And I've had a lot of people say, oh my God, this is so good. Thank you so much for that. So if you're into any of that stuff, go check that stuff out. But robotsradio.net is the main place to go, or the Discord. Right. And you guys are going to have a channel on our Discord as well. So if you are somebody
who wants
to connect and chat in that channel, but also see what all the other shows are. And there's all sorts. I mean, chances are, if you can think of a popular game series, we probably have a show for it. And maybe a Lorecast, but maybe a different kind of show. So lots of good stuff. And I hope everybody takes a chance. Yeah.
We're super excited about this, because I think it's a nice home.
Yeah.
Find for yourselves.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you guys are here. Obviously, we agree about a lot of things and, resonate on all of these different topics. And it's fun to have other shows on the network who understand the behind the scenes, what it's like to run one of these shows and have these communities and all the good things that come from that. And so it is nice to have you guys on board. So thank you so much for reaching out, and welcome aboard.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm so thankful to be part of it. So, and there you go.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. If you have any other questions, then look in the descriptions of either episode that you're listening to this, and you'll find links for everything. So there you go. Perfect. All right.
Thanks a lot.
We'll see you next time.
Take care, Tom.
To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter @robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people, on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.